Welcome to the current federal tax developments for the week of November 19th, 2018. Current federal tax developments are brought to you by Kaplan Professional Education and by your State Society of CPAs. This week, I'm recording this just outside of Baltimore, Maryland. I was flying cross country today. So basically, we ended up relatively late on Sunday. I'm getting this recorded here. We're sitting here just a little bit before 5 p.m. Eastern time. You know, just before 3 p.m. in Phoenix, where I normally record. So we're a little bit later today and probably get up later for the full audio versions and everything else. But we'll get the stuff together this week, looks like. That should be possible. And we do have a few things that happened this week in taxes. Getting ready for the Thanksgiving week, IRS decided to give us the first full dose of the inflation-adjusted figures under the chain CPI. Last year, we got two sets of figures because the chain CPI came in later. Now this year, just hopefully the chain CPI. The IRS also noted at the AICPA's federal tax conference last week, they discussed the increased numbers of breaches of preparer systems that the Criminal Investigation Division has noticed. We'll talk about some special relief granted to victims of the California wildfires for filing a deposit date relief. And we'll talk about an IRS email that discussed the application of the due diligence preparer penalties that were beefed up, shall we say, by Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, but have been in existence for a while. Well, the first thing we have this week is the discussion of these new inflation numbers we got for this year. Revenue Procedure 2018-57 that was released on November the 15th gives us the inflation-adjusted numbers for basically 2019 information. And what we're going to find is this is the year we're using the chain CPI. You remember we brought that up last year after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act passed, that we were changing from using the all urban consumers CPI to the chain CPI. That is now this year, the numbers are all computed under the chain CPI. Last year, we ended up getting a second recomputed set of numbers to get the chain CPI. This year, we're going to start with and hopefully just have one set of numbers. I will note this is a bit later than the numbers have normally come out. That's probably to be expected because the chain CPI takes longer to develop than does the regular. So probably going to have things coming out a little bit later from here forward. The qualified plan IRA numbers, remember we discussed basically, as I recall, it was last week or the week before we discussed that the IRS had released the numbers for qualified plans and IRAs. So those numbers are already out and have been out. So that's those numbers we already had. Those numbers also, interestingly enough, as we discussed when the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act passed, were not required to switch over to the chain CPI. So those continue to use the standard CPI, not the chain CPI. Interesting aside that for whatever reason, Congress felt that those numbers could stay where they were. This 2019 numbers are obviously 2019 numbers. You're thinking, well, what do I need those for? It's like, well, you got to actually start thinking about 2019 tax planning because some of the decisions you're going to make at the end of this year, you're going to have to make decisions about whether you do things this year or next year. And obviously, you're going to have to be able to factor in what's the 2019 numbers and, you know, how do they affect things? That'll be key. So starting this out, we got to revise tax tables for all taxpayer filing statuses. We have a PDF basically on the Current Federal Tax Developments website. If you go to our main news page, we have there a story that was posted early this week where you can download a PDF that has the highlights of these different items or numbers that were issued. Now, we also have a link directly to the full revenue procedure if you prefer to get it that way. So you can get it either way. But if you want to go find these, that's where to go. You'll find all the tax tables for all the filing statuses there. As well as, remember, we have capital gains brackets now. Capital gain is still linked to the old law brackets, while the regular, the ordinary bracket switched and, you know, got changed. So you have to remember that capital gain brackets are not the same as ordinary. It also means that the highest capital gains rate is hit before the highest rate under the new seven brackets. So you have to go back and check that out when you're doing capital gain planning. We also have the numbers for the earned income tax credit for next year. Those numbers, if you're interested in those, you do any returns that have that stuff on it, you probably want to go check how that's going to change next year. Other issues that we have include the exemptions for AMT for next year. They're in that range. For joint, it's $111,700. For single or head of household, the number will go to $71,700. And for married filing separate, it goes to $55,850. You know, those are our big numbers. Estates and trust, that's only $25,000 before you get the exemption for AMT. Other big thing we got there was the phase out, where it begins. As we've discussed with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the big change with AMT, and while AMT for individuals is much less of a problem than it was, even though they did not get the full repeal, is because of this exemption. Exemption is inflation adjusted. So next year, the exemption will not start to phase out till $1,020,600 for a joint return, for a single head of household, $510,300, and for married filing separate, $510,300 is where the AMT exemption phase out begins. Estates and trusts start phasing out their $25,000 exemption at $83,500 of AGI. Now, other numbers obviously are in here. For instance, the standard deduction, which, you know, it used to be we could kind of ignore that because most of us here who are in practice as CPAs, we all knew that our clients generally didn't take the standard deduction. The standard deduction was something that, you know, people who came to us just never took the standard deduction. It wasn't ever considered an issue. Now, suddenly it will be. We talked about that this year. Married filing joint standard deduction will go to $24,400, a slight bump over what we have for 18. The head of household will go to $18,350. And single will go to $12,200, as well as will married filing separate. Those are our limitations. The additional standard deduction, if you're blind or, you know, over 65, if you're unmarried, you're not a surviving spouse, it's $1,650. If you are married, you know, a married filing joint return, it's $1,300. So, you know, that, and that's always had that differential there. Other changes, cafeteria plan, medical FSA amounts, those go up to $2,700 next year. The Section 179 expensing numbers, and again, bonus depreciation makes this less, but not completely unimportant. It can be important because of state law purposes. It can be important because you can basically use 179 to dial things in better than you can bonus. If you're opting out of bonus otherwise, you can dial in the taxable income number you want. And as we said, some states will have had AM that will accept 179, won't accept bonus. So there are cases where you'll use it. And there are a few assets that are eligible only for 179, but not for bonus. The limitation on expensing next year will be $1,020,000. And the phase out range will begin at $2,550,000 worth of qualifying assets. The 199 threshold, 199 cap A, can't forget that, threshold amounts. You know, that thing we keep talking about that everybody just can't get enough of. And we're talking more and more about 199 cap A, which this week on Wednesday, I'm going to be doing a session in Phoenix, which right now, my understanding is we have over 100 people signed up for the session. So it'll be a nice little group. We're full down at the society offices. So anybody signing up now is going to be getting a webcast, at least unless somebody's canceled. But that 199 cap A is inflation adjusted. So the threshold amounts that you're thinking so much about this year change next year. Next year for married filing joint, it goes to $321,400. Married filing separate, $160,725. And for single head of household, $160,700. The limitation on electing the cash basis of accounting, that was $25 million this year. That goes to $26 million next year. You know, that's for those special change of accounting methods. So if you have somebody just right at $25 million, next year we get a little more leeway. They can go all the way up to $26 million. That can make it easier to make your decision this year about whether or not you want to risk making the change over to cash basis. The foreign earned income exclusion will go to $105,900 next year. The unified credit for estate gift taxes will be $11,400,000. It goes back up. It's going up some more. So we've got it up in that area. The present interest gifts, though, stay at $15,000. So the maximum you can give to somebody without having to file the gift tax return, $15,000. Again, you can give that to as many people as you like. But if you go over 15 grand, that triggers the requirement to file the 709 because we're going to have a gift we have to track. Also, if the gift is not a present interest, you would have to file the 709. The preparer due diligence penalty, we discussed that last week, the per return violation, the issues that come up there. That in 2019 will be $530, up $10 from what it was this year. So that's the one. Remember, that hits you if you have a return where the taxpayer has claimed the earned income tax credit. The taxpayer has claimed the American Opportunity Tax Credit. The taxpayer has claimed a child tax credit or additional child tax credit, or the taxpayer has claimed head of household status. You can be penalized $530 if you don't have the documentation. And I should be mentioned, somebody mentioned I wasn't clear on this last time. If you have somebody who has both head of household and child tax credit, fairly normal, and you don't document either one, the penalty is going to be $530 for each failure. So that would be a $1,060 potential penalty for not having the documentation. So again, we talked about that being significant. I suggest you be concerned about that. A lot more people are going to have child tax credit, a lot more, and of course, we're going to have head of household where income won't matter at all. So we need to be aware of that going forward. The revocation of your passport, that goes up to $52,000. So you now can owe the government up to $52,000 before they'll take your passport. We have that. And by the way, if you're still doing the qualified small employer reimbursement plans where you buy, you know, outside health insurance, the maximum amount of that for reimbursement for an individual plan is $5,140. It's $10,450 for a family plan. There are a number of other inflation-adjusted amount. A lot of penalties are inflation-adjusted now. We have other more obscure inflation-adjusted items like the adoption credit, you know, various other special rules that get adjusted. Check the revenue procedure or that PDF for those. The PDF has more than we've talked about here, but not all of them that are in the revenue procedure. If you really want to go check everything, revenue procedure 2018-57 has everything in it. This is these are the official numbers now. We've had a lot of tentative numbers from the tax publishing software, tax publishing houses. They've told us their guesses for some of the big numbers. Now we have the actual official numbers. Next up, an article from Tax Notes Today by Nathan J. Richmond. IRS saw a surge in attacks on practitioners' data in 2018. Came out in Tax Notes Today on November the 14th. This particular issue is talked with Brian Thomas, National Identity Theft Coordinator for the Criminal Investigation Division of the IRS. And he noted that they are seeing, you've heard the IRS talk a lot this year about concerns about breaches into preparer systems. It turns out Brian, you know, was telling at the AICPA Federal Tax Conference, noted that that wasn't just them, you know, complaining about something wasn't happening. They have seen a significantly higher number. Now, true, most preparers have not had their system breached, but obviously if it happens, it's really bad. He talked about one case this year where they discovered early in tax season, got reports a number of Oklahoma City police officers, had a couple of them had received unexpected refunds. And so they investigated that, discovered it was fraudulent. This has become one of the normal things that bad guys are doing. What they want to do is they want to get a valid return, a valid taxpayer return, have the refund go to the right address because the IRS was, you know, checking on things if address changed, etc. So they're routing it to the right bank account, right address, real taxpayer, but then they send them a notice or call them saying, well, you got a refund you shouldn't have gotten, which of course the taxpayers now look, yeah, I didn't file anything. I shouldn't have anything in my account right now. Well, you have to pay it back to us right away. And so they demand the money back. They get the money sent back to them, not the IRS. And obviously that's how they walk off of the money. Okay. What happened with this case was it determined, the IRS discovered that a single tax professional who had done these Oklahoma City police officers had had their systems breached in the summer of 2017. You know, they went back forensically and figured out where these people had been kind of rummaging around the system. They had gotten into the system in the summer of 2017. They had used their access to the system to rummage around and get client data. Now, how do they access systems? Number of ways they do it. Number one, a lot of preparers and CPA firms may have loaded up, you know, remote desktop connection from Microsoft and may even have it exposed on the standard port through their router. There are lots of ways to try to attack that people have tried, including simple brute force. If nobody's looking, you can pound on it on your own. Turns out a lot of us use what are not very good passwords. By the way, if you do not think they're going to find you, you know, how would they know it's there? there is this search engine called Shodan that will actually allow you to search the internet for ports that are open on computers all across the internet for various services. And you can ask for remote desktop connection, Microsoft's RDC. So you can find out who's got RDC ports open. You can find out what to hit. You know, you can find CPA firms. And, you know, once you discover a CPA firm, you know, you get in, it's a CPA firm, you can sell it and you can start getting the data. So you get in there, you get their tax files, get the information. When this big preparer tried to start filing returns in January of last year, turned out every single one of them rejected because they had filed returns for virtually all of this person's clients. They had done the fake refund routine. So when this guy tried to file returns, they started rejecting. Obviously, this was a bad year for this guy, we'll put it mildly, for the preparer in question. He'd been compromised in the summer. They hit it early in filing season because they need to get ahead of these people when they would actually get a refund. So they get it in, they get the refund. This is a standard routine they're using, and they're breaching systems. By the way, if you don't have RDC installed, don't think you're safe. Any other remote access system could be compromised in the same way. And the other problem you've got is that if you're not careful, malware can end up being installed in your system that could grant remote access. There has been known multiple cases involved where various bad guys have been sending out malware packages that would just install a third-party remote access software. What they will then do is they will get into your machines like at 2 in the morning, 1 or 2 in the morning, when nobody's at your office, you wouldn't notice anything because you're not looking. If you don't check logs, you'd never see it. And because of that, they then use that to be able to get the data and file things. So be careful here. And if you don't think anybody in your office would ever download an attachment or run something, just get somebody who does security to come into your office and do what's called penetration testing. And one of the things they'll do in penetration testing is they will normally try to send out, you know, phishing emails to your staff to see if they can get them to bite. And what's depressing to most organizations, the first batch of phishing emails they send out, they get almost 100% response. People will click that stuff. So be very, very, very careful. Emails, you've got to communicate to your staff. But no matter how good a job you do, it is very difficult to keep that stuff out. Okay. By March 15th of last year, the CID had breaches that were already 30% higher than all the breaches in 2017. So it's an increasing area. Again, they're going this route because they're trying to get around how the IRS, the state, and the state revenue departments are catching them. If they route it to a debit card now, or they route it to a brand new bank account, you know, that looks fishy. If they change the address, that looks fishy. So what they're trying to do is do that. And if they can, use a preparer system to submit the electronic return. So they're trying to make it look as good and as normal as they can. And then they go through that route of contacting the client and having the client send the money back in. The refunds are followed by that fake demand for payment. That's a popular ruse. They give an address to send to, which obviously is not the IRS. Now, taxpayers do owe the money back to the IRS. That's one of your fundamental problems. The real IRS is going to want that money back too. If they refuse to send it, they can be pursued. Penalties and interest can apply. You'd have to try to ask to get them waived. You should be able to, but it does not officially go away just by the fact that you have this, you know, you've done it in the fashion you did, and, you know, it came to me, etc. Technically, they had the money, and the longer they hold it, the more problems you've got. So just be aware of that particular issue. Make sure you're taking your steps. That's the reason why last year, all the tax software started requiring you to change your passwords every so often, use complex passwords on your systems in your office. Why? Because the idea is, at least if they get in, if the software in your office has complex passwords, the idea is they won't be able to easily get into that system. Now, remember the point of this. So that means do not put a file on your desk in plain text called passwords that has your password into your tax software on your desktop, in the machine, in the documents folder. Yeah, don't do that. Remember, this is meant to stop this. They also require changing the password every so often. As I've noted you before, I believe that itself is a waste. But nevertheless, those steps are in place. Now, the IRS also this week in CA 2018-13 which is now, you notice they're doing these news releases in cases like this where they do them by state code first. So it was issued on November the 13th. It grants relief to those in the California wildfire areas. Okay. Any tax filing deadline from 11/8/18 to April 15th of 2019 is pushed back to April 30th of 2019. That means the actual 1040s for 2018 will be pushed back, but not by a whole lot. You know, they'll be pushed back 15 days, but you will have 15 days for any taxpayer that was in one of those affected areas. So I guess that's better than nothing. Probably is not great, though, but it's there. It'll do it. Payroll tax deposits, those that were due from November the 8th through November the 23rd, as long as they're made by November the 23rd, we're fine. So make sure you take a look at that. Tell your clients. If you have affected clients, make sure they're made aware of these issues. There's also information on those who may not have a mailing address in the area, but had records or their accountant was in the area. The IRS in this news release has information about how those people can seek relief too. They'll probably get notified and get penalties, but they also can seek relief in this case. Now let's talk about an IRS email. Okay. We have an email here from the IRS, and what this email did was for an S corporation prepare a penalty. Chief Counsel email 2018-46005. The IRS was looking to assess the 6695G penalty on the shareholder of an S corp. Okay, they're trying to assess it on the S corp shareholder. And they were asking the national office, can they do that? Well, the national office said, really, just merely being an equity holder, if that, you know, that person's not the preparer, he's merely an equity holder, that's not really enough to move against him. You're going to have something more than that. However, that then goes through, there are cases where the employer of a preparer, which would be the S corporation in this case, can be penalized if the person that does is an equity holder, if they were aware that people weren't following the rules and, you know, weren't getting the documentation done, and they didn't take action to get them to do it correctly, or they don't have procedures to do it. And they suggested that that's probably a far more likely and better way to try to get after this, as opposed to trying to do it by, you know, coming back and trying to penalize directly an equity holder who they thought they might have real trouble proving against. They need to show he was a preparer. He doesn't really meet the definition of a preparer. So we have issues there. So that's kind of interesting. Again, considering that we've got this problem coming up this year, where we're going to have the due diligence rules in place, you probably like to get this email and note that, you know, even if you say, you know, I'm doing it fine, but if your partner's not doing it right, or you've got people in your firm that maybe skip it every so often, the firm can be nailed for this penalty, which probably means for an equity holder, you're going to get part of the nailing when this happens. So I would suggest you pay careful attention. And if you need to, use this email to put the fear into your partners and other members of the firm about why they have to really pay attention to these due diligence rules. As I mentioned last week, we do know of actions being taken against preparers, even when there was no tax deficiency, even when the status was fine, even when they were qualified for the credit, just because preparer did not get the information together. The IRS is serious in the comments to, in the preamble to the proposed regs. They made it very clear that they want you to have documentation. It's not enough to say that, well, my clients aren't cheating and I'm not going to ask this question. You better ask the questions. You better document it. When the clients ask you why you're asking the questions, you'll just tell them, you know, federal government requires me to. Just like today when I flew into Baltimore, I actually was on a plane that started in Phoenix, landed in Salt Lake, then flew on to Baltimore. I was in the exit row. I got asked the exit row questions in Phoenix. Now, the same flight crew is on the plane. The same person, the same flight attendant was in charge of the exit row. But I nevertheless, yet again, got the speech about it. And I also had to answer affirmatively yes, with verbal yes, that I was willing to do, you know, what was required when we took off from Salt Lake City, even though, you know, less than 2 hours earlier, I had answered those same questions back in Phoenix. to the same person. This is the same issue. You're required by law to do this. Well, whoops, I went too far there. If you're on the online, if you're on the video version, we have, hey, we're now in the State CPA Society big time of the year. And hey, it's Thanksgiving week. So hopefully you enjoy your Thanksgiving. I will be presenting, as I said, the Section 199 Cap A primarily. It's actually all the business issues in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, but by far the majority of the course is 199 Cap A on the day before Thanksgiving in Phoenix. As I said, we have no room in the building unless somebody cancels. I guess they might still put you on a waiting list if you tried to sign up for being in the room, but I bet you can't be there. But anybody who wants to could sign up for the electronic version of it, where we do it, you know, where you sign up and you pick up the broadcast and get your credit by doing it online. So we'll do that live. It'll begin at 8 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. Remember, this is Phoenix. We don't move our clocks. Now Phoenix has not moved its clocks, but for those of you in the rest of the country that this thoroughly confuses, now just think of Phoenix on the same time as Denver. They're not on the same time as Los Angeles, so we'll just keep it that way. So 8 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. It would end at 3:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So, you know, that's when we're going to be giving this course. So if you're interested, you can sign up at least through Tuesday morning. You know, Tuesday you should be able to sign up. We used to go with it Wednesday morning, and I look forward to seeing those who come by or online for the course. This has been the Current Federal Tax Developments for the week of November the 19th. You can catch our updates during the week at currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. You can also check your state society website. We have our continuing education courses. Again, we're running into that time frame now where time's running out before the time you guys all like to get it by the middle of December. So check your state societies. I am going to be doing a couple of courses in the U.S. Virgin Islands. That's kind of a nice place to do courses, you know, and hey, if you want to come down there, fine. But otherwise, I'll be doing it, you know, for other places. I'm scheduled to be in Indiana the first week of December. I am scheduled to have courses in Phoenix, again, with the Current Federal Tax Developments update, which, again, is mainly going to be a whole lot of 199 Cap A in that discussion. And also the Arizona taxes, Arizona ethics will be there. I'll be going to Minneapolis to do that same course I'm doing on Wednesday in Phoenix this week for 199 Cap A and other tax courts and jobs and job acts developments. I'll be doing that Qualified Business Income and More is the name of the course in Minneapolis coming up in the early part of December. So you can check there for that. Should be interesting. So, you know, check in, find that stuff. If you have questions or comments, you can email me at zollers@currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. I'm on Twitter at Ed Zollers. I follow discussions on Reddit at the subreddit Tax Pros. That's reddit.com/r/taxpros. And I follow the online discussions in four state societies. So you'll find me on the, find me watching California's listserv. I keep an eye on Arizona's listserv, as Arizona and Arizona, New Jersey, and Minnesota will call it Connect. And so Connect on Arizona, Connect in New Jersey, and Connect in Minnesota. So, or Minnesota, I should say. So whatever you have there, you know, you can pick up there and ask questions. That's a great place to bounce things off. Otherwise, it is Thanksgiving week. I don't know how much we're having developments this week, but we're still missing that 500 pages worth of regs on the interest deduction. Maybe we'll get that for Thanksgiving. We have something to read this week. We'll take a look and see. But in any event, we hope to have at least something to talk about next week. And we'll be talking to you again here talking at Current Federal Tax Developments.